I am recording. Today is July 13th, 2026.
Hi, everyone. Jennifer, thank you for coming. I'm excited for that you are here and we are hosting you. So Jennifer Koster, she's ACC, MA, and PhD. She's the DEIB Engagement Manager. I spend a lot of workshop with her, helping turn coaching competencies into culture of belonging. She is speaker, educator, connector, and facilitator. Jennifer believes inclusion isn't a statement, it's a skill set. I like it on your LinkedIn. Oh. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you all for having me. I am glad to be here. Thank you. All right. And just so you know, if there's not at least one technical issue per session, it's not really a session with Jen. So I always say that it's just what happens. So we got that out of the way early. But thank you all for having me. Welcome, everyone. I am really glad to be here today. And I am going to talk today about the stories we inherit, because I believe that every conversation we have includes more than the people who are just visible in the room. It also includes the stories we carry about concepts like confidence, professionalism, leadership, and things like success, safety, respect, and belonging. And if you don't know, 2026 is the year of belonging for the DEIB group department at ICF. So some of these stories are beautiful and they're sustaining. Some have helped us survive. Some helped our families or our communities make meaning in the overall world. But some of these stories might be outdated and they might be limiting our beliefs or our worldview. And sometimes these stories become so familiar that we start mistaking them for truth. So today will be a conversation. I am a professor of English, but I'm not going to lecture you with 1,000 bullet points. We're going to look at how inherited cultural narratives shape us as coaches, but also impact the client and all of the space in between them. So my hope is that by the time we leave here today, you will be able to leave with some language and some questions you can use in real coaching conversations. So here's the purpose of our time together. We're not trying to become experts in every culture, every region, every family system or client experience. So I want to make that clear up front. It's not possible, and it's not our job as coaches to do that. But what we can do is become better listeners. We can notice when we're making meaning far too quickly. And we can pause before deciding what something means, whether that's confidence, or what leadership should sound like, or what even success is supposed to look like. This directly relates and connects to our coaching competencies. It asks us to embody a coaching mindset because we're examining ourselves. It supports the concept of trust and safety, because clients feel safer when their context is honored. It strengthens active listening, because we're listening beyond just the words and the behavior that are directly in front of us. And it evokes awareness, because clients can begin to explore the stories that have been shaping their choices. So to begin, I want us to think about the stories each of us has carried into professional life and into coaching spaces. And before we go deeper, I want to name how we will share the space. This is a global coaching community, and communication norms vary. Some of us process things very quickly and say them out loud. Some of us like to spend some time reflecting. Some of us come from contexts where if we don't agree, we say that. And others come from contexts where that might feel disrespectful. So today, participation can look like speaking to me, adding to the chat, nodding, reflecting quietly, or circling back to something later on. I want to model the point of the session right away, and that's there's not a correct way to engage. I am, like you said, both a parent and a teacher, so you can interrupt me 1,000 times, it's fine. And if you prefer to be in the chat, that's also fine. If you like to do the emoji things, that's fine too. I like all forms of communication. I just like communication. That's the key here. So if you're showing me that you're out there, that's all I can ask. Sorry, I wanted to make sure I could see the chat. So yeah, some of us, you know, but I also want you to speak from your own experience. So there's not anybody here who is supposed to represent their entire culture or region or religion or identity group. You're not here to be the token person from that group. And most importantly, let's listen for meaning. And sometimes what that might look like is hesitation or confidence, deference, or when we talk about things like ambition, it might have a really different story underneath it. So just some ground rules to create our little container of belonging here. Speak from your own experience. Try to make sure that you use I language and avoid making one person the spokesperson for the whole group. Choose your level of participation. You know, use voice, chat, reflection, quiet attention, all are welcome. Listen for meaning. Notice the story underneath the words before responding. Stay curious. When something feels unfamiliar, ask before interpreting. So here's where we're headed today. Not going to be doing breakout rooms. We're going to stay together, and we're going to use a mix of storytelling, reflection, chat, and conversation. Cool. First, we're going to name the stories we inherit. Then we're going to notice our own lens as coaches. And then we're going to look at how clients might bring those inherited stories into the coaching conversation. And finally, we're going to practice the kinds of questions that help uncover those stories without assuming we already know what they mean. If you want to take notes, I appreciate that. As a teacher, I'll never tell you not to do that. But you could say one column could be stories I inherited, and the other could be stories I may need to listen for in clients. And so we'll begin with a question that looks simple, but usually opens a much, much deeper doorway. So let's start with a reflection. What were you taught growing up about confidence, leadership, or respect? And this is one of those participation moments, so feel free to think about it for a second. You can share it in chat. You can come on and talk to me about it. But you can also just hold on to the question and think about it. There's no right answer. But some of these things might look like things your family said, something that your school rewarded, things your culture valued, or later on as you enter the workplace, something that they taught you. Anybody have anything they want to share? You separate things indeed.
Working is for bringing salary, and you don't have to enjoy from it.
Working is for the salary, you don't have to enjoy what you're doing. All right, thank you. And in the chat we have, respect is for elders. Leadership means doing what needs doing. Any relation must be based on respect. Others?
I grew up until age of 14 in Romania, and I was taught, at least in school, I was taught a lot about respect, but not about confidence or leadership.
Yeah, me too.
I was thinking the same in Portugal. It was very interesting. And in respect, it was also this thing sometimes, not to respect others, it's the need to be quiet, seated, don't spoke.
Harry? I was maybe 8 years old in the subway in New York with my father going into the city to meet my mother. We were going to go to a concert. And the subway stopped and it was black. And my father put his hand on my knee because he saw that or felt that I was very concerned. I said, Mom will be all upset that we're late. And he said, your worrying is not going to make the subway move. And that became a life lesson. It was trust. We would say trust the process. It was trust that people have their own emotions. It's not for me to get involved with their emotions. There was sort of the way he said it, very calm. I heard, but he didn't say it. The subway will move at some point. I'm here. I mean, there was so much in it, but that was just a moment where that was a story that impacted me.
Wonderful. And at such a young age, too, that gets deeply ingrained and doesn't set you up for a lifetime of anxiety and worrying. And that's fantastic. All right. Respect was the base to relate with older people. I think that's interesting. I live in close to the same city that I grew up in, and I went back and taught a year of high school at that same school, and I remember the way I treated my teachers, which was respectful, and I don't know, I would have never used any kind of bad language or yelled at them or anything like that. And the norm for the way kids behave toward their teachers there now was so very different than how I had experienced it. And I have kids the same age. I'm like, is this how, what happens at your school? And they're like, yeah. They believe, like, culturally we've shifted to kids of a younger age think almost that the teacher needs to earn their respect. And I'm like, okay. So it's generationally, when we have a whole class on generations and relations, it's just interesting the mindset shift even between two or three generations. So when I'm talking about inherited stories, I'm not just talking about family memories or childhood experiences, but those are really important. I'm also talking about the meanings we absorb from the culture around us. And that can be like your community or your region, your educational experiences, your faith, your professional experiences, all the things that contribute to your lived experience. Because these stories become lenses and they tell us what feels normal. And they also tell us what sounds professional, who is allowed to be confident, and who is supposed to be humble. Who gets to speak first, who needs to wait, and also, and importantly, what kind of leadership will be trusted. And as coaches, these lenses matter because they shape how we listen. And they also shape our questions. If I assume my definition of confidence is that universal definition, I might coach a client toward a version of confidence that has nothing to do with their culture, their context, their values, or anything that is safe for them. And this is why cultural humility matters so much in coaching. We're not blank slates. We are all bringing stories to our coaching. The work's not to erase those stories, but to know when they're coming into the room. I want to bring this out of theory and into something lived, because one of the stories and one of the lenses I carry is being urban Appalachian. And if you're not familiar with that, and most people aren't, it is an ethnic group in America. I want to name that because Appalachian identity is frequently flattened into stereotypes. Even those outside of America have probably heard of hillbillies, and they're always made fun of, like, they marry their cousins, they have deep accents, why are they talk like this, and they're typically portrayed as stupid. So oftentimes that is how my ancestors and relatives are portrayed. And my experience is urban Appalachian. So it's not the whole Appalachian story. It's my story, but it's inside a larger and much more diverse region. But then it's picked up and moved into an urban setting. So I grew up outside of Appalachia, but with all of the core values from an Appalachian family, but in an urban setting. So it's an interesting mix. Like, here I am in the big city, but I'm acting like I'm back in the hills of Kentucky. So very interesting growing up that way. But it shaped me. It shapes how I understand voice. It shaped how I learned how to move between spaces and navigate things. It shaped what I thought sounded educated or how things are professional. And it also really went into what I understood that I needed to soften, translate, or prove. Most people tell me I don't have an accent. My family does. But they were very careful to make sure I didn't. For me, coaching and being coached have both been affected by that. There are times when I felt that old story of don't forget about your raising. That's one of the most popular ones in Appalachia. And that just means don't act like you're better than anyone. So sitting right next to the professional expectation, you know, we're all expected to promote ourselves. We all need to demonstrate that we can take up space and speak with authority. And there's times when humility and visibility have felt like they were arguing with each other in the same room. So, you know, there's that expectation that I should promote myself. But then there's also this thing on my other shoulder saying, but you need to be humble and you need to not do that. So it's this constant back and forth. And that matters in coaching because a coach might hear hesitation and call it a lack of confidence. But it's not always a lack of confidence. Sometimes it's loyalty to what you know. Sometimes it's creating safety. Sometimes it's that learned relationship to power structures. Or it's an old story about who might get punished for sounding way too sure of themselves. And my story is just one example. Every person in a coaching conversation carries some version of this or some other narrative that's just been ingrained in their head. And the question is whether we choose to listen deeply enough to hear it. And culture often hides inside the word normal. And I always make the square quote fingers because normal is not really a thing. We usually don't say my culture taught me to do this, right? We say this is just respectful or this is just professional. And that's how leaders communicate. But those assumptions aren't universal because direct feedback might feel honest and efficient in one person's context, but in another, it can feel really disrespectful or even it can be relationally careless. If you're not aware of a person's cultural context and you come at them very directly, well, you've ruined their day, you've ruined their week, you've ruined their confidence in their job, and all it would have taken is just understanding that's not how you come at them. You know, in some cultures, eye contact signals confidence in people, but it's highly disrespectful in others. And I'll go back to my example. Self-advocacy is really, really, really important in some environments. But to others, it's very risky. Where the coaching risk lies is not that we have a lens, because we all do. It's inevitable, it's impossible to exist in the world and not have one. But the risk is that we forget that it is a lens that we have in place for ourselves. Because when that happens, we start to interpret a client's behavior too quickly. In coaching, this is where our active listening becomes more than just hearing words. Instead, we're not only hearing the words, but we're listening for deeper context, meaning. We're gauging for the hesitation. We're looking at values. We're looking at how the client is relating to their descriptions of power structures, how they are defining their own identity, and then also sometimes what the client might be trying to protect. So I'll ask you, have you seen any examples that have created some kind of misunderstanding in coaching leadership or professional spaces? And if you have, drop those in the chat. I would love to hear about them. But sometimes those do arise.
I think what you spoke about self-advocacy, it's really present in a lot of cultures.
Mm-hmm.
It's very common in the United States, but in Latin America cultures, for example, can be hard.
Absolutely. And I have two sisters. I'm the oldest, and then my youngest sister and I struggle so hard with the self-advocacy piece or just, you know, promoting ourselves. But then we have a middle sister. She has no problem with this. She is a content creator. She is out there in the world just doing all the things. And anytime I need to update my CV or anything, I give it to her because she's the one, like the way she sees me, I wish I could see myself because it is such a better version. And I'm like, here, you do this. She has no problem doing that. I could never. I'm happy to support her, but I could never be that way. And I don't know how she is because we were raised in the exact same household in the same bedroom. So it's just interesting to me how some people could overcome that. But
definitely.
And communication is one of the clearest places those inherited stories start to show up. So some of our clients are taught to be direct, startlingly direct. And some are taught to protect harmony. Some people want permission to even enter the conversation. And some people are taught that you could never be uncertain. Some are taught that emotion makes them not very credible. And in coaching, we have to be careful not to overread communication style as character trait. Because a client who pauses is not necessarily disengaged. It can be a number of things that we could explore here, but for the sake of our conversation, a client who avoids a direct answer isn't necessarily resistant. One who speaks softly, not necessarily lacking confidence. I get told I'm a soft-spoken person all the time, and that cracks me up because I'm definitely not really soft-spoken in life. Like, it's not a thing, but I guess I come across that way. A client who speaks really strongly, not necessarily arrogant. For example, my sister, she speaks very strongly. She speaks very, very, like, confidently, but she's not arrogant. And the question becomes, what does that behavior mean to me? And it's, what might this behavior mean in the client's context? So if a client says, I need to talk with my family before I decide. As a coach, with a highly individualistic lens, you might hear, oh, no, you don't. You don't really have to talk to your family. You just don't want to tell me no. You just don't want to tell me you don't want to do this. You're just putting me off. But in reality, that client might be acting from a communal, relational, or family-centered decision-making story. They might truly need to go talk to their family. That's just what they're doing. And if a client avoids direct conflict, that may not mean they lack courage. It may mean they're navigating cultural expectations about dignity, respect, or even safety. And the same is true for confidence. Confidence is one of the most culturally loaded words in coaching and leadership development. Coaches often say they want a client to be more confident. But think about that. What do we mean by that? Do we want them to be louder? Want to be more direct, more visible, more certain, more willing to take a risk? Because when you think about confidence, what does that even look like? Sorry, I keep doing that. Confidence shows up in so many different ways. So when you say you want someone to be more confident, you want them to speak first in a meeting. Do you want them to wait for their turn and then bring in this great idea? Do you want them to choose the right moment and really hit them with something wonderful? Or do you need them to be more self-promoting? For some people, confidence means being really prepared. But for other people, confidence might mean I'm just simply going to put my work out there and it should speak for itself. And I'm confident it will. For some people, confidence means pushing back. I don't agree with your idea, I'm going to push back. And for other people, confidence means knowing how to preserve a relationship while still naming it true. But some of those things are similar and some are completely opposite. So to say we want someone to be more confident is a bit confusing. Ortal, did you have something you wanted to contribute?
Yes. You said a couple of times what I want as a coach, and I feel, and I'm almost sure that you didn't mean it right, but it's not what I want, it's what he, she, they want right to for themselves, because confidence from their perspective is totally different from my perspective. So I feel that it's not about me, it's about them. And
absolutely.
I have an example today. I had a client, he came and my face, he held something in his hand, but I couldn't see because my face covered. He held his baby, but it was so small that I couldn't see it and I couldn't move my face. It was in a different platform. And I, you know, he came because he didn't have any option what to do. He was very quiet and it was really important for him to come. And he's from a different culture. And I was amazed, right? How he could sit and be concentrated, and then the child came and from his culture, they do everything with the child. Small, it was one year and a half. I will never imagine in my life to come with one of my babies to a coaching meeting, right? But it was amazing, and he could concentrate. I could concentrate. So for me, it was, I didn't know how it would be, right? And he is a client that after the first meeting, he told me that sometimes he's speaking very, like he cut himself in the middle because he has an issue with the way of, he's very senior in the organization, right? If you will see him, you will never believe, but he's speaking a little bit different and it's amazing the process that he's doing, right? And he's clear and I don't want anything from him. It's only what he wants that will be happening in our meeting.
Absolutely. Thank you. I love the idea of coaching with kids present, but I personally love kids and I'd be like trying to play with the child. So that's me. I'd be like, oh, okay. So yeah, but thank you so much for sharing that. So I think this is one of the places where my own urban Appalachian lens matters, because in some communities, if you're too eager to promote yourself, it can have a very negative social cost. It can be read as forgetting where you came from, acting above others, or abandoning humility. And this does not mean that people in Appalachia lack confidence at all. It just means that confidence is being negotiated through a different story. And oftentimes, in Appalachia, instead of bragging directly, you tell a story and relate how you relate what you've done through oral storytelling. But the coaching move here is simple and it's powerful. Before coaching a client toward confidence, ask what confidence means in their world. Understand instead of just using the lens that you have for confidence. So a coaching question you could pose, when you imagine showing more confidence, what would feel authentic to you? And what would feel like performing someone else's version of leadership? I wish I could have had coaching. I started my career in banking several hundred years ago, and I am the way I am. I have a very distinct way that I like to lead. I wish someone would have asked me this question, because there were times when I had to do things the way that they wanted them, but I feel like if I would have been allowed to lead the way I wanted to, it would have been a much more humane and I think it just would have been a better way to lead, but I didn't know how to think about things like this. I didn't have that coaching mindset and I didn't have a coach at the time. So I really wish that I could have thought about things from this perspective. And leadership is another place inherited stories show up. We sometimes think leadership is neutral, but leadership expectations are really, really cultural. And they tend to be shaped by all the things we've mentioned, but also throw in gender expectations, race, language, disability, and organizational power. And oftentimes, I found that clients aren't being coached to lead, but they're being coached to assimilate into whatever the dominant image of leadership is where they are. And that's a really important distinction to make. So a client might be told, you need more executive presence. But executive presence often hides a lot of cultural assumptions. What kind of voice sounds executive where this person is? What pace of speaking sounds credible? This one's important to me. What accent is treated as authoritative? An accent, it's not just an Appalachian accent. It can be a number of different accents. What level of emotion is considered appropriate? I'm female. And as I said, I worked in banking. And let me tell you, there's no level of emotion that's appropriate for a woman in a business setting. None. And it doesn't matter if it's happiness, sadness, anger. They are all overblown because you are now a hysterical woman who can be direct without being punished, who can be quiet and still be considered strategic. So coaching can help clients explore how they want to lead in ways that are effective and authentic to them. And we just have to be careful that we aren't accidentally coaching them towards a dominant norm. That's all. So as you think about this, think about what leadership behaviors have you seen rewarded in one context, but completely misunderstood in another. So if you have any of those, definitely share them in the chat so we can be aware of them. But for myself, like I said, as a female, any kind of emotion, you're a hysterical female. I'm a person with a disability. The assumption is you can't do anything. It's like, well, I just have an issue with my leg. It does not affect my brain. So, yeah, I'm not sure how the assumption would be made there. You know, quiet is often interpreted as timid. I've seen males who are quiet and very strategic, very brilliant with their thinking. Oh, he never speaks up. Well, who cares if he speaks up? He still brings you the information and it's still implemented and it's still wonderful. Like, who cares if he's super chatty during a meeting? So these are all things to consider. And we're coaches and we're trained to listen deeply, but we are still in that room. We bring our own definitions of things like success, and we bring our own comfort with things like silence and speed. We have our own cultural stories, and we think about things through our cultural lenses like responsibility and emotion, agency. So as we're doing that, it doesn't make us bad coaches. It makes us human coaches, and I'm pretty sure that's what we all are. It just means we need to practice self-awareness. So before we interpret a client's behavior, we need to stop and ask ourselves some questions. I like to ask myself three questions. What am I assuming this means? So right off the bat, before I get in my feelings about something, before I try to take something personally, which I have finally learned not to do, what am I assuming this means? Is it disengagement? Is it neurodiversity? What am I assuming? Because it may not be disengagement. Let me think this through. What are my assumptions? Then I think, what else could be true? Are they neurodivergent potential? Is this a cultural thing? What are all the other things that could be true here before I start using that lens to spiral into something that is a story? And then what story might the client be carrying? If the client doesn't complete an action step, one story might be, we might suddenly decide we want to take that personally. They're not into our coaching. They're not committed to our coaching. It didn't align with their values. Maybe they encountered a power dynamic they didn't name. But sometimes they agreed in the session because agreement felt safer than disagreement. And that last one is important because in some cultures or professional settings or even family systems, direct disagreement with someone who's perceived as an expert can be very uncomfortable or unsafe or just simply not done. So if the client experiences the coach as an authority They may say yes when they mean maybe, or even flat out no. And whether you want that or not, no matter how equitable you are, no matter how much you do not want to be seen as an authority or the power in the room, sometimes that's just simply what you're perceived as because you are the coach. So how do we listen for the story underneath the first story? We use our roots framework. We want to recognize, and that's listen for the story beneath the statement. We observe, and that's we notice our own lens, our own assumptions, and our own norms. And we're open. We ask with curiosity instead of making assumptions, because assumptions are never good. We trace. We explore how the story shapes choices and identity. And we support. We help the client choose what to keep, revise, or release. Because our role here is not to rewrite the client's story, it's to help them see it clearly enough to choose what comes next. We can ask and use these as invitations and never interrogations. What message are you carrying here? And what assumptions might I be making as the coach? What does confidence or success mean in your context? How has the story shaped the way you show up? What part of the story still serves you? And importantly, what would you like to carry forward from here? And that puts the agency back with the client. It also helps them really start to see, you may have been carrying this thought, this story, this idea that you have to be a certain way, when in fact it's okay to set that down and leave it behind. You know, it's okay to be proud of having earned multiple degrees and doing well for yourself. It's not necessarily bragging. That's something I've had to struggle with. That's something that took a lot for me to be coached through. But I decided I didn't want to carry that forward. Am I great at it? No, but I'm much better at it than I used to be. So we can put this into a coaching moment. Imagine a client says, I've been told I need to be more assertive if I want to move into senior leadership. But where I come from, speaking softly and showing deference is seen as respectful. I feel like I'm being asked to become someone I'm not. A non-responsive coach would just say, well, senior leadership requires that assertiveness, so you've got to practice being more direct. I mean, from an outside perspective, that might sound really practical, but it completely skips over the client's story. It also assumes that the organization's definition of assertiveness is neutral and it's correct. But is it? A more responsive move is to slow down and really explore meaning. What does assertiveness mean in that context? What parts of your leadership do you want to protect? How might you lead with presence without abandoning respect? So notice what these questions do. They don't tell the client that their cultural value is a problem. They also don't pretend the external system doesn't exist. Instead, they create space for the client to make choices with awareness. And this is where coaching can be both honest and respectful. And hopefully it's always honest and respectful, but we can acknowledge that systems reward certain behaviors, and we can help clients decide how they want to navigate those systems without completely losing themselves, which is important. So ask yourself, which of the questions could you potentially use even today? Here's a simple practice you can take with you. Notice name, ask partner. Notice, what am I hearing and what am I assuming? And this keeps us from jumping too quickly from behavior to judgment. Name it. What lens or story might be shaping my own interpretation? And this is some internal work. You may not say it to the client, but you practice awareness. Ask, what question invites the client's meaning rather than mine? This shifts us from interpreting to exploring. Partner, how can the client choose what story to keep, revise, or release? This gives the client agency and honors their autonomy. None of this requires perfect cultural knowledge. And it actually is helpful if you don't try to think that you have perfect cultural knowledge. That overconfidence could be a problem. This is about disciplined cultural humility. It's about knowing that the client is the expert in their own lived experience, and our role as a coach is to create the conditions for awareness, choice, and growth. So I want to close by bringing this back to each of us. What story will you listen for more carefully in yourself or your clients? It might be a story about confidence. It might be a story about leadership. It may be a story about respect or gender, authority, disability, or belonging. But whatever it is, the invitation is not to judge the story. My invitation to you is simply to notice it and to ask, what has this protected for you? What has it made possible? And does it still fit? Because coaching becomes more inclusive when we stop assuming the client's visible behavior tells the whole story. We listen deeper and we ask better questions, and then we partner more fully. So I want to say thank you for sharing this time with me. And I hope as you leave, you have at least one question you can use in your next coaching conversation, and one story you're willing to listen to with a little more tenderness and curiosity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. Thank you. So before, only that I will not forget, and please don't go. I put the link. I put the link. Please fill the link. Or when we will reach to the part of the CCEs, fill it, that I will have all the details, okay? It's not for you, Jennifer. It's for the community. Thank you.
Jennifer.
Yes.
Don't take our being so polite and quiet as not being interested. You asked us to reflect and you put us into a deep reflection mode. That's why we were so quiet, at least I.
Yes,
you raised a lot of wonderful questions and very deep thinking, and there could have been a lot of sharing, but what you offered was beautiful and very deep. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I would love to hear what you would like to share. I just didn't want to not get through everything due to my not having the link. So yeah, I just want to make sure we ended it. But definitely share. I would love to hear what
you... No, you come back for another hour and we'll share.
Yeah,
everybody has to share. It's not about me.
But yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to.
But I can just tell an example of two different cases. One where I made, some years ago, I made quite a terrible mistake. And one of my clients that was quite severely bullied by his boss, I got into my story of an IDF officer and I replied from there. And in fact, what I did is I bullied him. Because I said, what? This is, and so on. And the other one was today, I had a wonderful, wonderful client. She's a very, very serious professional. And she was telling me a story, and she was telling the story for quite some sessions now. And I could see the tension in her neck. I don't know how to explain, but I could see that there was this, and I could see the veins, and I asked permission. She was telling about the job and boss and her organization, etc. And I asked her, may I ask you a personal question? And she said, yes, of course. And I said, are you happy? And boom, the story went out. Then she started. And then I asked her, so what you have told me in the last hour, what does it say? And she thought maybe 30 seconds, and she said, well, I understand that I need to move on. So it's part of the same story that you were mentioning somehow, I feel. Thank you.
No, it is. I can see how it relates, absolutely. Paying attention, hearing the context, noticing the body language that comes across and understanding the context that she's in. Absolutely, I understand completely what you're saying there. Well, I will mention, as Bortal said in my introduction, I am the DEIB engagement manager. If you're not aware, if you are part of ICF, we have multiple engagement groups specific for underrepresented communities, and we also have a DEIB practitioner community, which is open to everyone. We host way too many events every month, classes, different
topics.
Yeah, thank you. And we also do a series with my vice president called Voices of Belonging. It's open to everyone, whether you're part of ICF or not. I forgot to bring my links, but I hope if you're interested, you're more than welcome to reach out to me. I'll put my email in the chat. But if
you have your LinkedIn, I will put your LinkedIn.
Okay. If you have my email, I mean, feel free to use it. I am more than happy to talk about anything related here today or anything we're doing. I'm happy to share. But it has been an absolute pleasure to meet with you all. I appreciate the invitation so much.
Thank you. It was superb.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jennifer, for your wisdom.
Thank you. Carrie, can't hear you. Carrie, you're talking. I can't hear you.
There you go.
I was going to say thank you for your wisdom and your presence and sharing your own stories, which really triggered many of mine. I'm full of stories now. Who wants to spend an hour hearing my stories? 2 hours, 3 hours.
I mean, I'll be real honest, as a English teacher and a person who enjoys stories, I would.
Yeah.
And Julia, I see your comment and I don't want to let that go unnoticed. We had, during International Coaching Week, I don't know if you were able to join it, but Mindy Jewitz out of New Jersey brought in a very powerful speaker to talk about this very thing. And I don't think very many people saw the ad, but she definitely talked about this specific thing about Jewish anti-Semitism and how to get through sessions like that with clients who are speaking like this.
Mm. So
it was
powerful.
Yeah, it was beyond powerful. I learned so much in it. So I don't think there was a recording, but I know Mindy's always happy to talk about it. I'm more than happy to give you her info, but she's the DEIB engagement person for New Jersey, for our New Jersey chapter. She does a lot with us. She created a different group and things for us, but that's what they did for International Coaching Week. It was, as someone who is not Jewish and attending, I was really, I came away from it with a lot of understanding, and it was one of the best ones. But definitely feel free to connect, and I'm more than happy to connect you with Mindy if that's something you'd be interested in.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would be, and thank you very much. I have to go to the next meeting, but yes, thank you for that, and I would be very interested.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, it was great to see you all.
The recording will be up on the Sun website archives within 2 days.